Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Hi, I'm Paul Lisnick, and welcome to Behind the Curtain. Yes, when you are talking about maintaining faith for over 100 years, 108 to be exact, you can only be talking about one thing, and that is the musical Miracle, a story 108 years in the making, and it talks about the incredible Chicago Cubs victory in the World Series in 2016. Hi, everybody. It's Paul Lisnick. Welcome to this week's podcast. We've got some great fun stuff going on and kicking off with a great show playing at the Royal George. Which you will definitely want to see. And if you're a Cubs fan, you definitely want to see it regardless. But let me introduce you to the folks who are with me. We're going to talk all about the creation of the show. And we've got some of the stars with us as well. First of all, the man who whose idea this was, along with, I will say, I've done my homework because a good friend of mine is Julian Frazen. So I know that my first guest talked a lot with Julian Frazen to come up with this show, this idea and all that. Billy Merovitz, it's a name you know because he's a past representative and senator. And Billy, welcome to the podcast. Good to talk to you.
Thanks very much for having me. Appreciate it, Paul.
Oh, you've got it. And then, of course, the show doesn't exist without its music, its lyrics, and writing that is one of the greatest talented. Talk about a Chicago talent. His work is in Miss Saigon. He's written October Sky. He's got a project going. I hope I can say this, I'm going to say it anyway. He's got a project he's working on with the great Alan Menken, which we'll see down the line. I love him dearly, and it is Michael Maher. Michael, thanks for joining us as well.
Ah, shucks. It's great to be here.
And then we got a couple of the stars of the show. It's the father and son who join us. The son in the show, the one who has critical decisions to make as it relates to owning a bar in Wrigleyville near Wrigley Field, is the character of Charlie. He's played by Brandon Dahlquist, and Brandon joins us. Brandon, thank you.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And a gentleman who's been on this podcast many times before. You've seen him on Broadway, in Wicked, in Big, the musical. He's one of my favorite actors in town. I can't get enough of him. And one of the reasons that brought me to that show was to watch him perform, playing the role of Pops, Gene Wigand. Gene, playing a role much older than you really are.
Yes, decidedly older, by minutes. Okay. By minutes.
Significant number of minutes. Hey, Billy, let me start with you because, you know, some people would say, I remember years ago there was the play Bleacher Bums, but that was, well, when nothing was going to happen with the Cubs, but there's always Cubs fans out there. And I know you and your good friend Julian Frazen kind of kicked around this idea. How did you come up with this notion of we need a show called Miracle off of 2016? I imagine you guys talked about it after the World Series.
No, nothing like that. Ah. Nothing like that at all. You couldn't be further from the truth.
Okay, go for it.
I came up with this idea in February of 2016, before the season ever started and before the Cubs ever reported to spring training.
Wow.
I said, I think the Cubs have as good a team as any team in baseball. They have as good a chance of winning. Let's do a show about this 2016 season and follow the team through the eyes of generational Cub fans that own a bar in Wrigleyville, and their highs and lows, their ups and downs, overcoming adversity, losing faith and regaining faith. And this was all before the season ever started. And of course, if the Cubs hadn't won the World Series, the show would have had a different title. It probably would have been called Wait Till Next Year.
Well, you just answered my next question, because yeah, if they hadn't won, it sounds like the wind wouldn't have been put out of your sails. You would have just said it's a different show.
It's a different show. It would be like so many Chicago fans for 108 years have followed this team that they love and lived and died with this team, mostly died with the team. In this particular year that we picked, they didn't die. They succeeded. They loved. They survived with this team, and it made all the 108 years worth it.
Michael, in writing the music, and as I said, I always go to that Miss Saigon credit for you, because the notion of having a show as classic as Miss Saigon, writing something for it down the line, and then having it put in the show, to me is just an unparalleled kind of accomplishment. So that, congratulations on that for the 20th time that I probably said that to you. But but writing the music, music and lyrics here, I mean, you really, you tap into so many different things and different kind of genres. I actually, there were some songs that I kind of, for me, were reminiscent of David Yazbek's music. Of, you had some samba in there.
Yeah,
so I'm just curious, what was your impetus for that? And am I right, by the way, is Yazbek kind of a mentor for you in some way? I was curious.
I'm a huge fan. I mean, if he wants to mentor me, David, I'm available.
Okay.
If you're listening. But for me, it always starts with the characters, right? I wanted to get into the minds and hearts of these people, this working class Chicago family, and then sort of finding what they sound like and how they sing, and then sort of taking that. And then I like to sort of find all the different directions that can go, you know? So yeah, there's a daughter and she's so excited that she sings a rap number. And there's it's about the Chicago Cubs. So of course there's a blues song at the beginning. You know, I try to sort of find all the different colors in the musical palette that I can use.
And so, and you put it together, and the cast, of course, gets to have fun with all of it. You know, Charlie, I think I'll ask you, have you been a Cubs fan your whole life? What was it like stepping into the world of the Cubs and the role you had to play?
I'm a huge baseball fan. I grew up in Minnesota in the kind of Kirby Puckett years, so I grew up a Twins fan.
Well, that's why I asked, because I knew you weren't from here originally, so I was curious whether you came here and got Cubs fever.
I got Cubs fever when I moved here. I went to my first game at Wrigley in 2004, and it was the first ballpark that I'd been to that wasn't covered, wasn't a dome, and it was kind of a magical experience. And I bartended for about 6 years at one of the rooftops in Wrigleyville. Yeah, so I watched the Carlos Zambrano years and the Derek Lee years and all that pretty closely. So, yeah, I became a Cubs fan. They're my National League team for sure.
And, Gene, I know you have no memory of the 1908 victory of the Chicago Cubs, but here you are playing.
I have no memory of yesterday.
I love you. Anyway, seeing you is always a treat, but I'm curious, a little bit of a different role, again, playing the Wizard in Wicked and just all these great roles that you've played. You've been in one-man shows. You tackle this one. Was this because you've been a lifelong Cubs fan and you two said, I gotta be a part of this?
To some degree, it was frankly because Michael Mahler was involved. I've worked with Michael a number of times, and because I didn't know anything about the show or what it might be or anything else, all I had heard was that it was a Cubs show. But Michael Mahler was connected, and so I said, I'm in.
And I got
to
tell you.
And then they told me that Gene Wigand was being the cast, and I said, oh, well, I guess I got to do it anyway.
You know, anybody listening who doesn't know the dynamics, this is a love fest. They just don't realize it, but it really is. And Billy, I got to tell you, and when I saw the show, and you were there as well, you're probably there in several shows, but here's what I probably should have expected but wasn't thinking about. When I got to the theater, the number of people who showed up in Cubs jerseys and hats and 2016 paraphernalia, I realized what an incredible idea this was, because it's not just coming to see theater. Listen, there's people who go to see theater anyway, but you probably are bringing in people who have maybe never seen a show before, but because of the topic, and they dress for the occasion. Was that just special on the day I went, or does that happen every time?
No, it's happening more and more with more as we go week to week. More and more people are coming in jerseys and Cub hats and all kind of paraphernalia. And they're cheering. They're nervous as we get to the seventh game. Even though they know what the result is, they're nervous to see what's going to happen when we show the highlights on the screen. And they're the first ones on their feet to give the great cast a standing ovation.
Just fantastic. Michael, I want to ask you to do the superstition number, which I loved. And everybody... Yeah, everybody kind of does their own thing. I look at Gene, and it made me think, were they, and I'm going to ask you this question, Michael, but were they directed to kind of pick a superstition, or were all of them being allowed to just, hey, do your own thing, just pick something that you would probably do when you're, because we all have those superstitions when it comes to the Cubs.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It was a very collaborative room. The rehearsal process was really great. Our director, Damon Kiley, had like a great vision, but he also worked really closely with the cast to make sure everything felt natural and right for them and their characters. And our choreographer, I got to say, Dina DiCostanzo, did just a wonderful job of like not only coming up with fun movement and stage pictures, but of, like, you know, catering it to our cast and their specific abilities. So that's why everybody in that number in specific is doing something that's fun and personal. And, you know, she really made it not only work for the story, but for the people in the show.
You know, Brandon, what in your role of Charlie and your wife, Sophia, played by Allison Sill, your daughter, Danny, played by a couple of different actresses. When I saw it, it was Amara Sanchez. Elise Wolff also yep. plays that. But I'm just sort of curious. I mean, to me, watching you as a family and owning a bar in Wrigleyville, that's the story. But you feel like, as somebody who has also followed the Cubs my whole life, it could be any bar. You could be anywhere. These characters are real.
Well, yeah, I think that we've been given great music and lyrics to work with, and a great book by Jason Brett, and it's easy to tap into the kind of the humanity of these people, and we've got a really great group of people that we're just being honest up there and interacting. So yeah, I hope that we're coming across as real people, because it feels real up there.
Gene, I went
well,
to the...
I think...
Go ahead, Gene.
Well, let me chime in here.
Billing,
I think that your listeners need to know. This is not really a show about strikes and balls. It's a show about a family.
Right.
Just like any other family in the city of Chicago that has all kind of issues, financial issues, inter-family issues. And we see of course, we see the season unfold on the screens above them, but we live and die and are engaged with this family and root for this family and root for Charlie and root for Pops. That's what it's about. So if you have listeners that are not baseball fans, this is a show for them. It's not a show about strikes and balls or RBIs or home runs.
Well, and I agree with you. I will say, it is a show, being a Chicagoan is probably helpful. I would tell anybody to see it wherever you're from. But, you know, it's just that it's a Chicagoan. You talk about dibs. You know, you talk about different things. And we all just connect with it. But something, I got to tell you, Gene, Wygant, one of the things I found very powerful, I was with another colleague from WGN, his wife. And I'm trying not to say any plot points that might ruin anything, but I think it's fair enough to say. When the bar itself is named after Jean, your wife, she's passed on. But for me, and that's from the beginning of the show, but for me, what people really connected with, what my friends connected with, this notion of people who are at the cemetery talking about the Cubs with their loved ones who have passed, and even back in 2016, apparently so many people enjoyed that final game at the cemetery with their loved ones. Gene, I think your character, Pops, may be a character many people can identify with. As Billy says, it's about relationship and things, but on so many different levels, it really hits home, including the 2016 season for them.
Oh, absolutely. And my little story in my head is that they may have met at Wrigley Field, but you know what? At first, she really wasn't into him because he wasn't that much of a Cubs fan, but she turned him on to the Cubs and got him excited about the Cubs and their history and the lore and all that sort of thing. And it makes her realer to me and more useful and things like that I find fun as we go along through this show each night.
Oh yeah, you have such a great time doing it. Although Brandon, I have to ask you, the conductor of the orchestra is very much in the middle of the stage, and I will say I found myself praying throughout the whole show that nobody was going down that hole with the conductor. You all kind of got to keep an eye on that area, right?
There's a little safety ledge built there, and we've done so many reps on this thing that I think we know where we are. So hopefully we can allay any fear that the audience has.
Okay. That makes me feel better. I'm glad to hear about that.
Yeah.
and listen, I got a couple of things that I have to point out that are, Billy, related to the season. But I have to tell you, again, I don't care if you're a fan, not a fan, whatever. The way, and I'm not going to give too many details here, but the way in which that the final games, the World Series piece is handled with projections, the way it's handled, you've got that audience, Billy, done in a way they are applauding. They are with you. We are reliving that experience. And I understand it's about relationship and stuff, but being able to relive for once a happy experience, that's worth the price of the ticket, I got to tell you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it builds to that, the tension builds to that joyful moment in the seventh game. And of course, when Rajay Davis hits a tying home run, that was the shot heard around the city and deflates everybody. We thought we were five outs away, and this guy hits a tying home run. the reaction on stage of all the actors is the same kind of reaction that all of us had as we watched this and we thought we had it and it slipped away.
As it always does. And I got to tell you, I actually, you know, as time goes on, it's been a couple of years, I kind of forgot some of those things. So when it was tied, when there was extra innings, when the rain started, I was like, oh my God, that's right. That did happen. And all of a sudden, it brought my stomach, started turning in knots again for what happened back then and how everything that happened. It's just played so brilliantly. The audience goes bananas. And actually, Brandon, let me also ask you, I don't think I'm ruining anything, but there is a seventh inning stretch. When I was there, an older gentleman was on stage. Is there a seventh inning stretch at every show and kind of honoring somebody who may have been around a long time?
You know, we do sing the seventh inning stretch at every show, and we've been lucky enough to have a couple of cool people join us. We had Ryan Sandberg join us for our opening night performance, and Richard Roper, the critic at the Sun-Times, joined us last week. And this gentleman is a lifelong Cubs fan, 95 years young, and he wanted to sing with his grandson. So yeah, I believe that's an opportunity that we're providing patrons to participate in, and we've had some cool people join us.
Yeah, I have to say, go ahead, Billy.
Paul, we've also had Wilson Contreras there, and we've had Wayne Messmer, who sings the national anthem at all the games. And one of the things that I'm doing is I'm donating a chance to lead the seventh inning stretch to charities throughout the city of Chicago so that they can raise money for their charity. Okay, and the winner of the auction bidding will get to lead the seventh inning stretch. So it's a win-win for us, but for charities around the city.
Oh, that's a brilliant idea. That is really great. I have to say, when I saw it, Michael Kingston came out in character and said, "Hey, we have somebody special with us today." I was halfway on the stage, Gene, before they told me to sit down. It wasn't me. Then out came the 95-year-old.
Where I am, about halfway on the stage.
Right. Out comes the 95-year-old guy, and I thought, I could take this guy down. This is not a, you know.
I like the way you think.
Yeah.
I like the way you think.
You know, it was a good way to not feel so special, I can tell you. Hey, and Michael, let me come back
That's
to
right.
you.
Comes a Miracle the Musical, Tackle an Old Man.
That would add a new song in there right there. I'm sure you'd add that in.
Absolutely. It writes itself.
So, Michael, let me just add you again. Because so many of the songs tap into, again, the superstition concept, look for the miracle, you got to have faith. All these songs tap into what people live. And once again, I will give a shout out for The Voice Above the Crowd, that one song written by Larry Novak and Julian and Rona Friesen that is included. Did you kind of sit down and say, let me think about everything that has to do with Cubs and what people think about? You could have had a song on Dibs, you're right? There's so much that is our life here. Or were you guided there by the writing and other kind of things? How do you end up saying, this is what deserves a song?
Yeah, well, it was a very collaborative process. The book writer, Jason Brett, and the director, Damon Kiley, and I, spent a lot of time, with the whiteboard and our markers out, just sort of moving pieces around and seeing what made sense. But it really was about, how do we tell the story of this family over this season and like tie it to what's going on with the Cubs? And actually, like you've been saying, the Cubs season was so incredibly dramatic, like in reality, that it made our job sort of easy because it was like, oh, this has a natural dramatic arc, rising action and then a tragedy and then falling action and then back up to the victory. Like, it was sort of just about taking that story, being true to the people, and finding the songs that, they needed to sing in the moments where it felt like they needed to sing.
Yeah, and I tell you, and Gene, even as you described your character, Pops, before it, obviously, and you're an incredibly professional, wonderful actor. You give thought to a lot of character. The relationship between Pops and the granddaughter, even almost more so for me than the relationship between father and son, which is important, but that granddaughter is everything. She's the future for Pops.
Absolutely, and he says she reminds him of his wife, her grandmother. And plus, both our girls, Elise and Amaris, are just so terrific and so charming, and they give us way plenty of grief, in a good-natured way, They're just terrific young women, and they're so professional and so enormously talented, just such wonderful singers and terrific young actors. It's pretty easy to fall in love with them and to have a wonderful time on stage with them.
Well, it's just, as I said, it's such an amazing experience. And Billy is right when he says this isn't about even having to be a Cubs fan or knowing much about baseball. It's when you do, you get it in your own way, and certainly at that level. But even if you're a theater lover and you just want to have fun listening to great tunes written by one of the greatest talents in this city, Michael Mahler, then, you know, that's another reason to go. But it's just plain fun. And as I said, for those who really did get into that 2016 experience, get ready to relive it again. People were just, and the show was over, people were on their feet. I was on my feet, even though I was still trying to get on the stage. They wouldn't let me. But one of these days, I'm going to show up. You know what, Billy? I'm going to just bid for that auction thing. That'll be my way up there to do the seventh inning stretch.
You got it. You get the charity and lead the seventh inning stretch.
Okay. Fair enough. We're going to make that happen. Congratulations to all of you. The only thing I want, Michael, is a commitment from you to write a musical for me and Gene where we play father and son. Can you do something like that for us?
Oh, my gosh. It could be like True West where you keep trading off.
Exactly. And it's sort of like, and I grow up and I find out my father isn't Jewish. It's a whole thing. I've got the whole plot in my head.
Oh, man, it writes itself. I love it.
It does write itself. Well, Billy Maravich, congratulations to you on this. This isn't an open run, by the way, and so I will say that because, although don't wait to get tickets, one never knows, so you don't want to wait to get your tickets. Billy, I thank you, and again, Michael, congratulations. Can't wait to see your next project. Brandon and Gene, as always, incredible acting, and always thrilled to see when you are performing. You can get tickets at MiracleTheMusical.com, MiracleTheMusical.com, or call 312-988-9000. It's located, the theater is the Royal George Theater, right across from Steppenwolf. Use your spot hero. Get parking. It's quite easy to do so. And enough places around there to have lunch or dinner before or after. So really, you can make a day out of it. It's just a great, great experience to go through. I wish I had thought of it, but I didn't. Thank you all. Let's go out listening to, once again, now that people have heard what this is all about, I think they will agree, you got to have faith.
The only thing you like is faith.
A horse is a horse, of course, of course, and no one can talk to a horse, of course. That is, of course, unless the horse is the famous Mr. Ed. Go right to the source and ask the horse. He'll give you the answer that you endorse. He's always on a steady course. Talk to Mr. Ed.
Ah, yes. Well, no, we're not about to talk to a talking horse. But I could not resist playing that song because what we are going to talk about is an incredible Chicagoland tourist thing to experience that it took me my whole life to find out it was there. Go see it. And I want you to know about it, too. It's the Temple Lipizzans, white stallions who you can see and visit with and watch perform just outside of the Chicago area. I mean, Temple Farms, located in northern Lake County, not that far out of the city, or for that matter, coming in to Illinois from Milwaukee. And for somebody who's afraid to drive north of Belmont, I can tell you it is absolutely worth the ride. Joining me is Esther Buonanno, the program director at Temple Lipizzans, and Ted Goat. He's the lead horse trainer. Welcome both of you to the show. Esther, do any of the horses talk?
Hi, Paul. You know, if you'd asked for a stallion to be on the line, they would not object.
Ah, I should have thought. Where was I? So, Esther, as the program director, tell me a bit about, I mean, I went through this experience, and I think it's just amazing, but I'd rather our listeners hear it from you. What is the experience? You drive out to Temple Lipizzans and tell us what it is for the price of the ticket we're about to experience.
Okay, so what you really arrive when you pull in the driveway just to the middle of the rolling hills and plains of northern Illinois. The backdrop is spectacular. You arrive and can get a lovely lunch at our cafe. If it's an evening performance, grab a glass of wine and prepare to be entertained with our performance. So we do public exhibitions every summer, and the way we have set it up is sort of an educational segment. It's the first half of the performance where we introduce you to the youngest of the Lipizzan herd, so that is our foals, and they actually come into the arena and like to show their stuff. And we show you the younger horses and how they develop. We have an educational segment that explains what in the world is this dressage thing. We find sometimes that dressage riding is a little bit like the emperor's new clothes, in that when it's being done well, you shouldn't be able to see anything that's happening at all as far as what the rider is doing. So we actually explain a bit about it, and then we demonstrate a very high level dressage routine. It's all set to music, so even if your interest is not in the educational background to this sort of 400-year-old performance art, it's incredibly entertaining. And in the second half, we have choreographed pieces that show the highest levels of classical riding. That goes from the airs above the ground. A lot of people know the Lipizzan horses for their great jumps in the air, the former battle maneuvers that have turned into a stylized art form, and highly choreographed numbers that have several stallions in them.
Yeah. It was, you know, I have to say, my first experience with Lipizzan horses, I was in Austria, and I went, and the original, I don't know if they're original troop of them, but it's still in the original place that the performances were put on. They actually let me sit in Franz Joseph's chair.
Oh my God.
The Emperor of Austria, which meant that as this performance was going on, the horses and the riders all sort of played to the guy in the chair, which just happened to be me for that performance. But what an incredible experience, and the history behind this. Ted, you are the lead horse trainer. Is there something special about a Lipizzan horse that is different in terms of what you're able to get them to do than, you know, than your average any other kind of horse that is out there?
Well, I had to laugh when you played that piece as well, because the Lipizzans are always talking to us.
Ah.
They have a way of communicating, not with words, but they're very intelligent horses, and they're always trying to express themselves, and our job is to teach them to express themselves, you know, on command and in front of an audience. That's the real challenge, is teaching them to perform in front of a crowd and do the things we want them to do, but also enjoy what they're doing.
Well, I was going to ask you, do they enjoy them? I mean, they obviously have to know that when they're out there, there are people all around them, almost in a 360. Not quite, but almost. And watching them, do they get, to your knowledge, do they get the sense of performance that they are being observed, and are they kind of proud to be doing what they're doing?
Absolutely. The younger ones, you know, can sometimes be a little bit afraid of the clapping and of the noises the crowd makes. But once they realize that all those people are there to watch them and they're clapping because they did something special, they love it. We have a Capriole horse who literally will look at the crowd after a Capriole and act like, did you see what I did? Did you see how cool that was? You know?
God, I love it. This tradition, of course, goes back a long way. And Esther, I know it all started with the founders, Temple. Actually, that because Temple is the name of one of the founders, and Esther Smith. They brought 20 Lipizzans from Austria back in 1958. So the 60th anniversary of the birth of the first foal at Temple Farms. And this is also a special year when it comes to foals, right?
Yeah. So we have eight foals this year in our 2019, and a lot of people ask, what do we do in our off season? And actually, we are training full year, only doing the exhibitions in the summertime. But when the foals come in the spring, it's like it brings us this hope and excitement about the future. But I always think of these foals, and this year we have eight, which is the largest foal crop we've had in a while. As first of all, they are the future. We have another 12 years till they are performing at their peak. And, you know, it's really an investment in time and training and care. But also they are this gift, this little DNA package from the past, you know, and I think to have sort of the future and the past in this furry package, which wants to just perform for you, is something special.
Yeah, Ted, I also know these horses, well, you know, while we love them here in the Chicago area, they've actually been a part of six presidential inaugurals. I mean, Reagan and Carter, and you've got some famous horses going on here that's appreciated even by the powers in Washington.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, even in those settings, they can be so aware of their presence and that they're there for a special reason. And they, you know, they always live up to the moment, you know.
I know back in 1985 that your guys' horses pulled the casket of the unknown soldier from Vietnam at Arlington mm-hmm. National Cemetery. Ted, are they also able to kind of grasp a solemnness of the moment, maybe a sadness of a moment? Do they relate to that?
Yeah, they do. Unfortunately, we lost one of our horses this year, actually.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Which has got to be very difficult, obviously, because they become family. Esther, that's very clear that they become family. When you hire the riders, Esther, the folks who ride them, obviously, they can't be any rider, right? I mean, I'm not going to come.
Right.
I don't think I'm coming to the Temple Farm and taking riding lessons on them. I wouldn't want to be let near these horses to do that. special people who are trained to ride the horses?
Yes. You know, this is a very difficult thing to find the exact person. The people who work here are incredibly committed, incredibly talented riders and trainers. But the type of work we're doing, you know, there's a dressage as a sport, and which resembles what we do very strongly, but the higher levels that we reach in the airs above the ground and the long reins and some of these old school dressage classical arts really requires an artist. And there is no question that I would call anybody who's here training our horses in the artist category.
And Ted, one of the things that I thought was so cool, I thought it was being done for me because I was special. The good news is, no, I'm not that special. This is that everybody can do this, which is that after the show, we can go back into the stables and actually, I mean, we can pet the horses. I mean, it's all supervised and all that, but we can be amongst the horses and get a better sense. And there's various people who caretake for them and who answer questions. And Ted, that seems to be a pretty important part of this experience as well for the people, maybe for the horses.
Absolutely. And, you know, you touched on the fact that they're sensitive and they're aware and they're so good with the children and with people of disability. And they seem to know how to behave with different people. You know, like a trainer, they're going to behave a little differently than with a person that knows nothing about a horse, you know, and they seem to be able to sense that. That's one of the things we love about sharing these horses with the public, because they really come to the level of the person that they're with.
Ted, could you also clarify? I always thought Lipizzan horses were always white, and one of the things I learned when I came out there was that's not true.
Mm-mm.
No, it's not true. It's actually good luck for us to have a black or brown stallion in the stable, and this year you're going to see a bay Lipizzan performed the Corbett for the first time in his career. So
wow.
That's pretty special.
Esther, the part that the snobby part of me did enjoy was folks can actually get a VIP ticket to this, and as I did, and sit ringside very close to the action, but we actually get to enjoy. I felt like I was sort of in Europe because there was wine and there was cheese and there was some cookies. And I mean, I felt bad for all the people who didn't have the VIP ticket. I didn't feel bad enough to offer them anything, but
no, you're absolutely right. And I would encourage, if listeners are interested in this experience, which is very popular, that you get your tickets early because, yeah, you get treated to, you know, your sparkling wine, charcuterie, your cheese, and it's a really nice experience. And I think it's really the way to enjoy these horses if you can.
Yeah, I thought that those of us who are in the VIP section would take a horse home. I thought that was part of the deal.
Oh, we'll think about that maybe if you come back this year, Paul.
Okay. Yeah. No, I would never do that to the horse. So it is really the full experience from getting there and not even thinking you're in Illinois anywhere from the surroundings because it's that beautiful, to the show and the lunch ahead of time and the wine during the show and interacting with the horses afterwards. It's amazing. Things start on Father's Day, and but you don't perform every day, Esther, right? So it's certain days of the week, certain times.
Right, and we are on when we have matinee performances and we have evening performances, and once a weekend we have either a Saturday evening or a Sunday matinee, and then we have varied Wednesday matinee performances, and the matinees are at 1 p.m. and the evening performances are at 6 p.m.
I saw a matinee, by the way. Is there a reason to see the evening performance separately, or I mean, is it the same show, or is it like, yeah, just pick what you want, or no, you kind of should attend each one?
I highly recommend the evening performance if you haven't been to it, because of how the light falls on the horses. The late day light is really stunning. You know, you've got this sideways light, the horses almost float, and then we've got, of course, our incredible, you know, blingy bridles that are sparkling in the sunlight. It makes it quite, I think it brings quite a romantic feeling to it all.
Wow.
Yeah, I think it's a little more dramatic feeling.
Well, that's good to know. Then I certainly need to come back. Ted, I'm curious, as the season is getting underway, is your life busier now, or it's just the same all year round because you just always have work to do with these horses?
It's turned up a notch, for sure, getting ready for the performances, but we're really busy all year, training new riders, training new horses, and, you know, the last performance, we get to take a deep breath, and then we start working on next year. So it's we're pretty busy year-round here.
Wow. Well, I want to encourage people to check out the website, templefarms.com, T-E-M-P-E-L, templefarms.com. The phone number is 847-244-5330, 847-244-5330. I'll also post that as part of the podcast listing when we post the podcast. And I tell you what, you've got kids, adults. It's an evening for adults. It's an evening for the family. This was really one of the greatest treats I've experienced living in this city my whole life. And I thought, man, it's not a hidden gem. I was just too stupid to know about it. But once I found it, it's something I tell everybody that it's a thing they must do and they must visit. Temple Farms.
Yeah, get the word out. We want more people to come on up and check it all out.
Experience this treasure of Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Esther, Ted, thank you for your time. And I certainly know and I trust that that people will make their way out there and experience what I did, which is to have the time of their life. Thank you, guys. And thanks for enduring my Mr. Ed theme on the way in. But we're going to get out there and see those gorgeous horses again. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Paul.
Thanks so much. Come see us.
All right, and as our final moments here in the podcast, I want you to know about an event coming up that I think you'll find fascinating. It is the 58th Chicago Book and Paper Fair. You know, I'm a big collector. A lot of you, if you know me, you know I do collect a lot of different things. And one major thing that I do is I love collecting historic books, autograph books. It's just fascinating to me to own a piece of history, to be a part of history. And I wanted to teach you guys a little bit something about it, especially with an event coming up, which will allow you to experience this field. So joining me now is Daniel Weinberg. He is the owner of the Abraham Lincoln Bookshop. That's a bookshop I've heard about for years and years and years and years, and only got there recently to see the incredible stuff that is available for purchase there. It's been around since 1933, believe it or not. It's Chicago's second oldest antiquarian bookshop, although I don't think the current owner was there back in 1933. I could be wrong. But that's at 824 West Superior Street. Let's find out a little bit more about it. Daniel, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much for having me, Paul.
Was it always in your family, by the way, or is it something that just you came to years later?
No, I came to later. I always loved books. I was working at the late lamented Paperback City in New York, and the opportunity came up to meet Ralph Newman, who had a history shop, which I was in the middle of anyway, and here I am 48 years.
Incredible. And the shop is incredible, but we're taking a broader perspective today, although I encourage people to come check your stuff out and some of the great documents you have. But talk to me about what is it about people like you, like me, that are so fascinated about owning maybe a document that's signed by Thomas Jefferson or a book that's signed by a president, by Franklin Roosevelt? I mean, some people might think we're crazy. Why do you think we love this so much?
Well, there's certainly an obvious joy of being the custodian of books and historical objects for future generations. and having them in their home where they can be shared with others and inspire one's own children, hopefully, to respect what has come before them. But it also connects one to a person or a time period that's important to him. And it's, when I first came to the shop, there was a collector who came in, and I only saw him a few times, and middle-aged man, and he collected Franklin Roosevelt. I didn't learn until the second time he was in. He couldn't read. But he wanted to have books around him about his hero, and he did that, and it inspired him.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. When did this start for you?
Well, I've always loved history, and I've always loved books and reading and the mystery of history. And so when I was in the middle of my doctorate at NYU, and instead this history shop came by and became a marriage, and here I am.
Now, some people, of course, can check out incredible books, and so I'm going to just share. One of the things that I saw in your shop when I was there was you actually have the Bible that Mary Todd Lincoln, Abraham Lincoln's wife, had when she was committed to a sanitarium. Is that right?
Exactly. She signed it and dated it in that year of 1875, which was so difficult for her. And she was into spiritualism and religion at that point, and certainly this is a Bible that she had to have close to her. I'm going to have it at this book fair, which is Saturday, June 15th.
Let's turn to that. Absolutely.
5 p.m.
Yeah, the 58th Chicago Book and Paper Fair. You just said June 15th, one day only, 10 to 5. I'll say this again, but the Chicago Journeyman Plumbers Union Hall, 1340 West Washington Boulevard in the city, free parking, easy to get to via CTA. What is it that people will see as they come to the Chicago Book and Paper Fair?
Well, one's going to see all sorts of fields, Americana and literature and poetry, cookbooks, science and technology, Civil War, transportation, illustrated books, Chicago history, and many types of objects within that, autographs and broadsides, maps, photographs, prints, posters, even vinyl records and ephemera of all sorts, paper that will bring you back to an earlier time.
And is everything for sale? Are there some things that are just there for display, or literally if we see something that knocks our socks off, it's probably for sale?
Well, you know, it's like a museum, but you can walk away with the exhibits for a price, I presume.
I love it.
But, yes, almost everything is for sale there, yes.
You know, that's why I don't go to museums. I'm like, if I can't buy it, why am I coming?
Exactly.
So when we're at this show, and I have to say, when I think of things like the, you know, Mary Todd Lincoln's Bible, this is not stuff you know, you're going to bring a $20 bill and go buy something. I mean, some of these things, let's be honest, I mean, the price range is all over, but I imagine there are things for those who don't have a lot of resources available, and then things for those who are more well-to-do.
Well, actually, it's for everybody. It truly is. You're certainly going to find plenty of items under $50 or $100 to obtain, which is, to me, still collecting. If it's a joy to you and you have it in your home, then that's collecting. But there will also be items that can go well over $10,000, thousands of dollars, and I'm going to have a signed Lincoln photo there, certainly worth $95,000, I would say.
Now, you know, Daniel, and you and I have talked about this, you know, for people who say, I'm afraid, how do I know things are real? There's so many people out there who want to try and, you know, hurt other people, take their money. What kind of guarantee do people get that what they're looking at is real, it's authentic, it's the real McCoy?
Well, certainly, even books can fall under that because someone can take apart a book and put it back together and make it better, perhaps. But that's up to us, the dealers, to inform ourselves, be conservative, make sure that what we have and hold, we can guarantee for the life of the person who's buying it that it is what it is, and if not, we will take it back. That's what most of our dealers do, and so we take pride in doing that, and we want people to know that they can purchase material from us and hold them and enjoy them and in knowledge that they are authentic.
I sometimes get asked this question by people in my life, but you know, I sort of said, why do we love what we love? But now let me take it to the collection kind of element, because everything starts with one, right? For me, it was, you know, one piece of animation, one document, and then it's like you can't stop. But for family members, or I shouldn't say, for people who do collect and others who look at them and go, why are you doing this? What is the reason to collect? Is it investment? Is it, you know, because things will
value?
No,
really it's not. True collectors, or most collectors, don't do it for investment. You buy an original Gettysburg Address, that's an investment. But you do it to feed one's own soul. I tell people that book fairs are a feast for the eyes and a feast for the mind, and you can also feed your own soul. And that's what you do. And I tell spouses, let your other, your significant other, collect, because you know where that person is in the next room with the collection. So it's something that there's no known antidote for in collecting. I think you actually have it or you don't. And when you do, it's really a joy to do it if it doesn't overpower you.
And some might say, hey, look, maybe I'm busy that day. I can, because I know I can find a lot of the things you have at your shop on the web. I can go to the web and I can see them. For me, it's not exactly the same experience. But for those who say, I'll go on the internet, I'm not going to physically come to this book fair, what do you say to them?
Well, first of all, you can go to the book fair website, mwaba.com. And you can, actually I think it's .org now that I think about it, mwaba.org. And you can find all the dealers that are there and find them on the web. Many of them don't even have shops. That's one of the reasons one goes to a book fair, to find people. You can't go to their open shops. All of a sudden dealers are there who do it out of their homes, still professionally. You can always find them on the web. So that's another way to do it. The Antiquarian Booksellers Association of America, ABAA.org. You can go to that, and you will find dozens and dozens of antiquarian book dealers around the country and around the world, and in every aspect of human endeavor.
By the way, I just want to, just so we're sending everybody to the right place, I'm sure that is right, but in doing my work from you, I also have a website of mwaba.com.
Ah, so mwaba.com, thank you, Paul, is for this book fair itself.
Ah, okay.
And you'll see all the dealers that are there, and you can always, in fact, I think you can click on many of them and go to their own websites. So if you can't be there, come to mwaba.com or abaa.org. And you'll find all the dealers that you would ever want to see.
And by the way, I know there's lots of things available, but there's also going to be paper marbling demonstrations going on. What is that?
Well, most people know marbling as end sheets to an older book. It's an art of printing multicolored swirled patterns on paper or fabric. And these patterns are formed by floating colors on the surface of a liquid, and then laying paper or a fabric onto the colors to absorb them. And that becomes a sheet of marbled paper that is cut up for various things, mainly for end sheets of books. They can be gorgeous, and they've been going on for centuries.
Well, this is an event that I hope everybody can make some time to go and visit. It's Saturday, June 15th, only that day. It is an annual event, but you don't want to wait till next year. Is it always in Chicago, by the way?
I'm sorry?
Is it always in Chicago? So if they can't go this year, they can go next year.
Exactly. It'll always be here. It's a yearly thing. We've been doing this for years as well.
All right. You can find out the details again at mwaba.com, Saturday, June 15th. But you know what? Go visit Daniel, because he's there. You'll see him at the Abraham Lincoln Bookshop at 824 West Superior Street. Or go online and take a look at his website, alincolnbookshop.com. And, of course, that's because Lincoln used to always sign his name, A. Lincoln, right? ALincolnBookshop.com. You have an incredible collection. I've really enjoyed getting to know you over these last period of months.
Thank you, Paul. I
wish you well at this event. And, I hope to check it out myself. And let's stay in touch and get more people involved in this hobby, because it's really kind of fun.
It is great fun and a great joy, as I say, for the soul. Thank you, Paul, for having me.
You've got it. Daniel Weinberg, the Abraham Lincoln Bookshop. Thanks so much. Check out the event. Don't miss it. Once again, mwaba.com. Thanks, Daniel.
Thank you.
Well, if you want to know more about what we've talked about here, follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Paul Lisnek. That's PAULLISNEK. And I'd love to hear your comments or topic suggestions for future podcasts. You can also go to my website, paullisnek.tv. And hey, don't forget to hit subscribe on WGN Plus and iTunes, and tune in each week to hear more insider scoop coming to you from behind the curtain.